Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Not inside the Yachin Community Studios today. Probably why I'm shouting a little extra loud, because we are outside. It is beautiful.
Oh, yes, it is.
Beautiful day to be broadcasting outside from, because we are live at GCU's Brazel Park.
Brazel Park. This place is unbelievable. You said it's like a spring training facility?
This is.
Oh, my God.
This is as nice as any of the spring training facilities here in town. It's a beautiful baseball stadium.
It seats 4,000. Fourth largest on-campus facility west of Texas. Their ballpark is as large or larger than 8 of the 11 Pac-12 facilities. All 31 home games are free of admission. Free admission. Taking on Stanford, Arizona, Wichita State, Utah. They've won the WAC back-to-back years. I have a lot of people who know Tim Salmon went here, the former MLB grade player Tim Salmon. And their head coach is Andy Stankiewicz, who is beginning his eighth season as head coach. So they get started tonight, and we're here to watch it.
Yeah, we are. They take on Wichita State tonight at 6. We'd invite you to come out and join us now, but you can't. It's closed campus. But you can certainly come out and watch tonight's game. The gates open at 4:30 this afternoon. Wichita State this weekend. It's just beautiful out here right now. And when you walk in and see this ballpark, newly renovated, newly remodeled, you will be impressed. It will be hard for you not to be impressed. Gambo mentioned just the sheer size of it all. It's very nice. It's very, like I say, it's got a very spring training kind of vibe to it. One of the nicer spring training parks here in town. It compares very, very well to it. So come on out, enjoy either the game tonight or one of the games this weekend. GCU, their baseball opener tonight. I know they lost in basketball last night. Too bad, their third straight loss. But GCU continues to do very impressive things here.
We're not having any luck in basketball in this state right now.
Oh, man.
Arizona's lost 6 in a row. ASU just lost 2 out of 3, 2 to bad teams and 1 to a terrible team. GCU's lost 3 in a row. The Suns have lost 15 in a row. Yeah, basketball's just, that's not our thing, man.
It's just not.
Basketball's not our thing.
When does baseball season start? Can we get a baseball, please? Apparently it starts tonight for GCU, right? Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
The All-Star break is upon us in the NBA, and today everybody gathering in Charlotte, all the players, all the particulars, Devin Booker in the three-point contest tomorrow, DeAndre
Ayton. God, I can't wait to see Booker in a real All-Star game. You know, they've got to win games in the to get him there, but I cannot wait for the day to see Devin Booker, hopefully in a Suns uniform, in the All-Star game. I mean, he is a good player. I mean, he's going to be very worthy of being he'll be an all-star in his career. I truly believe that. I do. But, you know, three-point shootout and everything, okay, that's fun. He's there. But I'd like to see, you remember what it was like with Nash and Amari and I think Marion made it. And, I mean, the Suns always had all-stars.
Yeah.
They always had, every year they had all-stars.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. You talking, and I was just thinking, I think there was a stretch there where I personally, and I don't want to say we or you or us as a community, I'm just talking about me here. I might have taken the Suns' participation in the All-Star game for granted a little bit because, I'm not a huge fan of All-Star games, right? I don't in all sports. I mean, they're just okay. They're just okay. And so when Nash would be in it or when Amari would be in it, yeah, it'd be nice, and I'd keep an eye on the game, but it's not like I would watch every single minute of it. It's been so long since the Suns have had an All-Star, it kind of makes me realize that I think I might have taken it for granted. Steve Nash was the last All-Star, I think, in 2012.
Oh, my God.
For the Suns.
They had in 2004, 2005, they had 3.
Yeah.
Marion, Nash, Amari. The next year, Marion, Nash. The next year, Marion, Nash, Amari. The next year, Nash, Amari. The next year, Shaq, Amari. The next year, Nash, Amari. The next year, Nash. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, this, like, Nash, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for Nash that I'm looking at. Amari was, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're right. Every year, like that run was like this. The Suns were in the All-Star game. You got Suns players to watch.
Yeah, and I don't know about you. I took it for granted a little bit. And again, that just kind of stems from I don't really like All-Star games that much. But it will be nice that when whenever the day comes when Booker is in the actual game and he's wearing a Suns jersey, hopefully we all see it. Hopefully it happens. Hopefully it's something we get to experience. DeAndre Ayton is there as well. He's playing in the Futures game. And he had two curious media availabilities today. One during an NBA.com interview and then one just during his general press conference. During the NBA.com interview, he was asked what's possible for Ayton and Booker in the future. Here's what he said to that.
What do you think's possible for you two in the future?
My mind is blank right now. Just having a good team, probably. Just, you know, pretty good team and, you know, great more vets, probably.
Right.
That's it.
More vets, probably. Not much of an answer.
That was not a very inspiring answer, was it?
Mine's kind of blank right now.
What happened to Shaq Kobe 2.0?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, pre-draft, it was, I hope the Suns take me. It's going to be Shaq Kobe 2.0, and it's going to be this. And here he is on the biggest stage the sport has to offer. And he, my mind's kind of a blank right now. I'm not really sure.
Shaq Kobe 0.6? 0.0006?
I don't know.
0.000006?
And look, I'll give the kid a little bit of a pass. It's his first All-Star game. Whether he'd admit it or not, I'm sure there's some nerves. I'm sure there's some butterflies. I'm sure there's some, oh, my God, I'm at the All-Star game. I've always wanted to do this. And maybe his mind is a blank. But considering that just, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, the answer to that question was, we're going to be Kobe Shaq 2.0. And now it's, I'm not really sure. My mind's a blank. Not really sure what we're going to be. I just thought that was a weird answer.
I really, truly believe something I've been saying all year. The culture of losing, it wears you out. It beats you down. It wears you out mentally, physically, emotionally. It just, to lose as much as they lose, these guys are dumbfounded. These guys, they've won. Everywhere they've gone, they've won. Look where they went to college. Yeah, okay, DeAndre Ayton didn't win a game in the NCAA tournament. Damn, that team was predicted to win by a lot of people.
Sure.
Devin Booker won.
Josh Jackson, Kansas.
Kelly Oubre. These kids have won all their life. They get to the NBA and they can't win a game to save their lives.
Yeah.
They're on a 15-game losing streak. I mean, it beats you down. It's indescribable. It is. It's indescribable. Or indescribable.
Indescribable.
Indescribable, thank you. How to explain all the losing and what it's doing to
this
team.
Here's a soundbite that backs up your point, I think, very eloquently. This was DeAndre Ayton later at the general press conference, and he was asked about, and you mentioned it a second ago, the Knicks won last night, right? So technically, Phoenix Suns have the worst
losing
record in the NBA.
Losing streak is over.
And the Suns right now are today in the driver's seat for the number one pick. Now it's equal between the top three teams, the bottom three teams, but they have the worst record in the league. He was asked about Zion Williamson. Ayton was. About Zion Williamson and whether he could make the Suns a playoff team. Again, going to your point about the losing beating you down, listen to his answer.
I don't know, man. I don't even know what a playoff team looked like. I'm just still trying to figure my way out.
I don't know what a playoff team looks like. He doesn't.
No? Well,
you're playing them.
Yeah, you do, actually. You're playing them.
You've played teams that are playoff teams. You've seen the Clippers right now are a playoff team, right? You played them the other night. You've seen what they look like.
Kings could be a playoff team.
You know what they look like. You see how they battle. You see how they play. So to say you don't know what it looks like, you've played against them. That's what you want to be. You aspire to be that. We aspire to be Sacramento right now. And I mean, I think you made that point very early in the season. So I'm just piggybacking off of that. And you were right. I mean, it is the best comparison of where the Suns should be is what Sacramento is. That's the best comparison, is that they should be there. I wish we had De'Aaron Fox, you know, instead of Josh Jackson. I wish they did. But De'Aaron Fox wouldn't work out here because they had Bledsoe and Knight. So he wouldn't work out here. Sacramento got him.
Yeah.
Damn, I wish they would have gotten De'Aaron Fox. He's good.
No, I've been saying it all year. I'm jealous of the Kings. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. I can't believe I'm saying that. But I am jealous of the Sacramento Kings. I have been for most of the year. And not just because of De'Aaron Fox and whether the Suns should have taken him and not Josh Jackson. It goes beyond that. Sacramento's history of losing, I mean, they're
you go look at the year by year, you'll see a 10-year span where, man, they didn't win many basketball games.
But the Suns, for all of their ineptitude the last 8 years or so, are still a top five or six franchise all-time in win percentage. They are not the Sacramento / Kansas City Kings. They've got a better history than that. To think that the Kings were able to figure it out faster than the Phoenix Suns still irks me, and it makes me kind of jealous of what they've got. More DeAndre Ayton today talking about living up to his own expectations. Listen to him just kind of rookie wall. There's no rookie wall.
Yeah, just not giving up. I'm still trying to figure out this thing called a rookie wall. There's no rookie wall.
Have you hit one?
No, it's non-existent. It was a myth. And, just maintaining my body every day and staying on the same schedule.
I don't know if he's hit one. I mean, there's only 23 games left,
right?
Plays
6 minutes. He sits 10. He plays six. He sits and he plays six. And it's just, I'd like to see them play him an entire quarter. Play him a quarter and a half.
I'd like to see him get the touches that he probably deserves before we talk about whether he's hit a rookie wall or not.
Okay, this is what comes first, the chicken or the egg. I mean, they need a point guard.
Minutes or the – well, that's true.
They need a point guard. Somebody get him the ball.
Hey,
look, playmakers.
Another Suns conversation that's going to go back to their lack of a point guard. We haven't had that conversation 1,000 times in the last 2 months, have we?
Listen, there's no mistake this kid's going to play in the NBA. This kid's no bust. He's not going to bust out. This isn't Marquise Chris. This isn't Dragan Bender. It's not Alex Len. He's going to have a good career in the NBA. Is he going to be Hakeem Olajuwon? I don't know. I mean, if you look at his numbers, a lot of people will say, wow, what he's doing for a center compared to what other centers have done, he's one of the top three that's ever come out as a rookie based on certain numbers. I don't know. I think he's going to be good. I don't know how good. It's very early to tell. We got to give it some time. The kid's young. Played 1 year of college basketball.
It is one of the biggest offseason needs the Arizona Cardinals need. Options. What do they have that's out there when it comes to fixing their offensive line? We'll talk about that coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, thanks for hanging out with us on this Friday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Steve Keim, part of Newsmakers Week on Doug and Wolf, and again, the Burns and Gambo Show to Doug and Wolf. Congratulations again on another great week.
They did a great job. Yeah, it's so much fun to listen to literally all the interviews. They do a great job with that. Hats off to them. Great job.
Yeah, they really do a nice job with that. Steve Keim was on Wednesday. And when he was asked to address the biggest needs this offseason, it was pretty clear and pretty obvious to everybody who's watched this team this year.
I would say playmakers on offense. That and stability on the offensive line. I mean, really, there's two things. I mean, you can block all day, but if you can't create separation, it won't matter. And then vice versa. If you can't block up front, it doesn't matter how much separation you create. So I guess what comes first, the chicken or the egg, I think you got to protect first, though. So there's no doubt that we have to get that offensive line fixed to make sure that we can not only run the ball effectively, but protect as well.
It's funny to me to hear him answer that question because he started with the skill guys, the difference makers offensively, and then just quickly, it's the offensive line. Like he started down that road, and by the end of the soundbite, it's all about protecting, chicken and egg kind of thing. You got to start with the protection, and that starts with the offensive line. Free agency is going to begin in a matter of weeks. And we'll find out what the Cardinals, and I'm kind of curious to see what sort of insight you've gotten into what the Cardinals are planning on doing when it comes to free agency and offensive line.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I do have some names for you that we could go over, some possible names for free agents. But I will say that it's not – they're going to have to get some guys in the draft too, because this free agency class is not going to be – fantastic. I mean, there's not a lot to get excited about. You know, of course, about Roger Saffold. He's a guy that they will take a long look at. He's very solid. I'm going to give you another name out there to keep an eye on, too. Andy Levitre from the Atlanta Falcons. He's a little bit older. He's 32 years old, but he played very well a couple of years ago. He was hurt this past season, but he's definitely a guy that they can look at. And then there are going to be a couple of players on that Denver Broncos roster that Cougs is very familiar with, and guys that he could say, okay, I know these guys, I'm familiar with these guys, I can bring them in. So I think immediately the two guys are Andy Levitre, who played at Oregon State. He's 32 years old. He's a Falcons guy. This would be the third Falcons guy they were able to bring over. Saffold is another guy. And then take a look at some of the guys on Denver that there's familiarity with. There's a 27-year-old guard named Billy Turner. There's another guard named Max Garcia. There's a center named Matt Paradis. Those are the players to me. I look at those guys and I would say put those five guys in a list, and I think that's going to be where they really try to address some of the needs.
There's also a right tackle named Jared Feldier as well.
I don't think they're going to go Jared Feldier. That's why I did not bring that up.
I was just looking at the roster. No, I'm mainly just to be a pain in the rear. But I'm looking at these free agent offensive linemen. I'm like, oh yeah, I recognize that name, Jared Feldier.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys on the Broncos just that they have that are unrestricted free agents. Billy Turner, who's a 27-year-old guard. Max Garcia, a 27-year-old guard. They've got a 29-year-old center named Matt Paradis. And then again, Andy Levitre from the Atlanta Falcons, who's 32, played at Oregon State. And then Roger Saffold, who I got to look up how old he is. He's been in the league for a while. He's still a good player, but he has been in the league for a while. And I think that's where they're going to go. I think the Rams are going to try to re-sign Saffold. He's a left guard.
He's 30. He turns 31 in June.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, if they could get him, he's just solid. He's solid. But the Rams are going to want to bring him back. He'd be a guy that would probably cost you some money.
Well, that's kind of what I'm thinking is if I'm just, you know, on February 15th, if I'm kind of assessing the situation, my guess, re-sign Barksdale, have him be your right tackle, spend a lot of money on a guard, hopefully Saffold, maybe Levitre, maybe somebody else we're not considering, or somebody off of Denver's staff. And maybe if you get somebody off of Denver's staff that isn't as expensive, you can spend more money on a right tackle. I liked how Barksdale played.
Barksdale's good.
Towards the end of the season. I thought he was a good, solid acquisition.
He's good.
By the
yep.
Cardinals. And a guy that we've talked about him a lot, that I would prioritize wanting to bring back if I'm Steve Keim in the Cardinals, because I think he can fill the need and probably not break the bank doing it.
Saffold is a really, really powerful blocker. He only gave up one sack last year. Pro Football Focus had him graded as the number 9 guard in the NFL. So, you know, he's the longest tenured Rams player. I would think that the Rams will make it a priority to bring him back. And then you turn your attention to Levitre, because I think it's probably easier that you could get Levitre. He's 32, and he could probably come in here and man it for a year or two, so for a couple of years. Good player, was really good a couple of years ago, did have a little bit of an injury. So that's the thing with me. I think those are the guards are the guys I'm really focusing on.
The injury guys make me very nervous. Very nervous.
He had torn triceps.
In
2017, he played very, very well, but then he suffered a tricep injury.
Justin Pugh, Andre Smith.
I know,
right?
I know.
You start throwing around money to guys with a history of injury, and I hate to say the phrase, you get what you pay for, but oftentimes you do get exactly what you pay for. And that's a real – whether it's just last year, the Cardinals tried that, and, you know, depending on what price point they're looking for, they might not be able to afford anything but that. But, man, that makes me really nervous. In the meantime, here's Steve Keim. This is from December 14th. He was a guest on the Doug and Wolf Show, so about 2 weeks to go before the end of the season. He was asked a question about whether he anticipates extending Robert Kamdichi's contract.
You know, that's something, guys, that I'm going to, you know, just keep to myself. You know, I don't really want to talk about it in the media, but he is, he and I have had conversations, and mm-hmm. I've made it very clear with him where we stand and what my expectations are.
A report today from Tony Pauline. He is long time. I've known about him for a while. He is a draft expert, NFL draft analysis, and publisher of draftanalysis.com. He's also apparently a lifelong fan of Led Zeppelin, according to his Twitter bio.
Oh, that's good.
Well, that's very good. I mean, he's obviously got a very good taste in music. He tweeted out today that he thinks the Cardinals will draft Quinn and Williams because they are planning on cutting Robert Kamdichi this year, this offseason. That they're likely to cut Robert Kamdichi this offseason.
if he's got an injury, you can't cut him, right?
You can reach an injury settlement with him.
Come to an injury settlement.
Yeah, you can come up with an injury settlement with him if you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible. Very possible if they can get him healthy, that they could not bring him back. We've talked about, you know, him a lot, and of course DJ and what to do with those guys. Kim Dichie's been a major disappointment for a first round pick. He's been a major disappointment. I don't see any scenario in which they bring him back.
Right.
You know, I don't think there's a scenario in which they bring the guy back.
But even if when did he hurt his knee? I'm trying to remember the exact date. Maybe Jordan back there can look it up for me real quick. Depending on when he hurt it, I mean, the reality is, cut him or not, you can't count on him. I mean, cut him or not, you can't plan on him being a real part of your franchise, at least not next year.
No.
Not coming off an ACL. I mean, even if he, as we saw with Marcus Golden coming back from his ACL, even if he's healthy, he's not necessarily right. He's not necessarily back. It might take him a full year before he becomes the same player he was before. And even then, I don't know if I want that guy back.
Well, because he wasn't a team player. There was a lot of frustrations with the players that I spoke with about him because of the gap control issues. You know, because a lot of times guys would have to, you know, make up for the mistakes that he made. So he's hurt right now. He's just gonna have to rehab and make him earn it.
It was December 9th.
Okay, so he's all right. Well, he's not gonna play next year anyway. I mean, if he does, he's barely gonna play next year anyway. Nothing against Tony Pauline, but I should have thought of this before. It almost doesn't matter whether they cut him or not. At least in terms of what they're gonna do in the draft.
I don't think you can. I mean, you're not gonna be able to. I mean, he's injured. Can't cut him.
Well.
He's had that injury. I mean, if he's going to miss all year with that injury.
He's not going to contribute next year. So whether they could or whether they couldn't does not have any impact whatsoever on drafting Quinnen Williams or not drafting Quinnen Williams, because Robert Kim Dichie is not going to contribute much next year.
No.
Can't.
No.
Can't. Not coming off of that injury.
Yeah, and if he is out all year with the injury, the next year they just won't bring him back.
It has become the top talking point in this year's NFL drafts. What does Cliff Kingsbury think about all the Kyler Murray rumors? You'll hear what the Cardinals head coach had to say when he was a guest on Newsmakers Week. You'll hear him next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Andy Greenberg is back there in the Auction Community Studios with today's Twitter poll question of the day. Hi, Andy.
Hey, guys.
What's shaking?
I'm proud to be the first of two Andys on the show today.
Well done. If there's a power poll of Andys who are going to be appearing on the Burns and Gambo show, it's
Andy Green, Andy Stankiewicz, Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith is not appearing on the show.
You're missing Andy Pettit, Gambo.
Andy Pettit.
Andy Pettit.
Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia. Luis Garcia.
I'm trying to think of Andy's.
Luis Gonzalez. Buck Showalter.
Andy Sheets.
Andy Sheets. All right, Andy Greenberg. What is today's Twitter poll question of the day?
Who will play in an NBA All-Star game first?
Oh, wow.
73% say Devin Booker. 27% say DeAndre Ayton.
I'd go Book. I'm going Book. Yeah. You gonna go DeAndre? You going DeAndre?
No, I'll go Book.
You go Book too?
Yeah. But I had to think about it a little bit longer. That's good. That's an interesting question. If you really think about that, that's an interesting question, because you could argue
there's less competition.
There's less competition for eight.
Less competition.
Then it's going to be easier for him to pop.
Booker could be elsewhere.
Or Booker could.
But he can still start an All-Star game.
Yeah, I think you need to change the. It's your question, Andy. You can do what you want, but you might want to change the question to phrase it as a Phoenix Sun. And maybe that changes the numbers a little bit. I don't know. Just a thought. Because if you change it to who's in an All-Star game as a member of the Phoenix Suns, maybe people will look at it and go, I don't know if Devin Booker's going to be a Phoenix Sun.
That kid's in fourth grade right now. The next NBA All-Star. He's in fourth grade.
That's good, because the Suns will draft him in 2 years when they have the number one overall pick again. That's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. Cliff Kingsbury. It's like the the finale to the fireworks show on the 4th of July, right? All of these guests on Newsmakers Week, and they saved the biggest firework for the very end. Cliff Kingsbury, the new head coach of the Cardinals, in studio this morning on Doug and Wolf as part of Newsmakers Week. And there were a lot. They had him for two whole segments, basically a whole half hour of radio. A lot of topics to get into. Obviously, Kyler Murray is topic number one, given Kingsbury's comments, given the fact that he and Murray share an agent, all the speculation, things like that. We're just going to play some of the sound. We'll just kind of react to it, kind of in the moment, what we hear, what we think.
All right, shoot.
Here's Cliff Kingsbury. Does the Rosen-Murray attention bother you at all?
No, I don't think so. I think it comes with the territory. Anytime you have the number one pick, there's a lot of intrigue and a lot of hype. And, you know, both those guys are tremendous players. And it's going to be fun going through the process for the first time.
I don't know why it bothered Cliff. I can see why it bothered Josh Rosen. I don't know why it would bother Cliff.
I don't even think it should bother Josh Rosen, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah.
You just, yeah, whatever. He might be the kind of kid who's
won. You're not drafting Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
You drafted me in the first. You moved up to draft me with the 10th pick. Like, you're not drafting Kyler Murray.
Although we did agree that earlier in the week when we were talking about this, or late last week, that it would be cool for you as the Cardinals organization to have a conversation with Josh Rosen privately, off the record, you know, not a public forum, a public press conference or anything, and just say, hey, you're going to hear a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Ignore it.
Just ignore the noise.
Just ignore it. You know, yeah. I mean, even he can be as tough a kid as he wants, and he shouldn't be bothered by it. But just in case he might be a little bit bothered by it, have a conversation
with
him.
Listen, you want to draft him and trade me? I'm going to make you pay for it. I mean, you got to have that attitude. You have to believe in yourself. No matter how bad that year was, Josh Rosen's a very confident guy. He's a very confident player. He was put in a no-win situation last year. He was really set up to fail in many ways. He was set up to fail. So it is very difficult to gauge that. But if I'm him, I'm not worried about competition.
Yeah.
I got a year experience under my belt, like you said yesterday. That's a big thing.
So, Murray, at the Combine, how much will Cliff Kingsbury look at Kyler Murray at the Combine?
Yeah, it makes you think you're in the Truman Show. You know, when something like that comes out, you're waiting for the guy to kind of, hey, this is all a big play that you're in. But, no, I think anytime you have the first pick, you're going to look at all the top guys. You're going to evaluate everyone, see who can help your franchise, your organization the most right now. And so we'll evaluate them all and go from there.
All right. So, again, in the Truman Show comment, I don't know if you remember the movie with Jim Carrey, The Truman Show, where his whole life was a TV show and he didn't know it.
No.
You don't remember? That's kind of what Kingsbury
sounds
was.
Sounds like an awful movie.
No, it was actually a very good movie. It was this child who was born, right, basically under a giant dome, and he didn't know it, but his entire life was being filmed as a TV show. And so he, every, it was like the... Like,
oh my God, I'm glad they didn't do that to me. I'd be in jail right now.
So, if we had a camera on you to see all the things that you did?
My first job, I worked for the mob.
I know, you would have been a great... The Gambo Show. Instead of
oh
the Truman
God.
Show, the Gambo yeah. Show? Oh, my God. That would have been a
you
ratings bonanza.
Visit me in prison. All right. I'm going to give you this on Kyler Murray, NFL research. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Most batted passes, quarterbacks. Daniel Jones, 12.
Okay.
Dwayne Haskins, 5.
Okay.
Drew Locke, 8. Kyler Murray?
2.
5.
Okay.
Kyler Murray had...
I knew you were playing a little trick on me. It couldn't be that high. You're bringing it up. It couldn't have been that high.
No,
you wouldn't have brought it up otherwise.
Listen, you played the game very, very well. Most batted passes, defensive linemen batting down passes. Kyler Murray, 5. Dwayne Haskins, 5. Drew Locke, 8. Daniel Jones, 12. So here's a guy listed at 5'10". He's listed at 5'10". He had 5 passes batted down last season. That is tied for the fewest among the 4 quarterbacks of the top 50 prospects. The other 3 are all 6'3 or taller, and they had more passes batted down outside of Dwayne Haskins, who had the same amount.
Kyler Murray's creating his lanes. Kyler Murray's
the window,
on the move,
the
finding
window.
His windows. Right.
He's finding the windows. He slides to find the window. Now, again, it is a timed game. It is something that you worry about, but that is a very interesting... That statistic, I saw that today, and it jumped at me. And I would have, like, if you would have said who had the most passes batted down, wouldn't, I mean, if somebody just asked it, wouldn't we automatically say, well, it has to be Murray?
That'd be the assumption. Yeah.
It has to be Murray, but it's not.
Something else from Kingsbury, and I think this was on the topic of Murray, this was the answer that I liked the best. There's this whole idea of a quarterback who could run Cliff Kingsbury's offense, a type of quarterback that he would prefer. He said this morning on Doug and Wolf that there is no such thing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, I think you can build it around you want the base skill set. You want guys, obviously, to be smart, talented, competitive. But we try to adapt it to their best skill set and make sure they're successful and they're comfortable in it. And so we've done it with a variety of different kind of styles of play and different type of mindsets.
I like that answer because it everybody has just assumed that when Kingsbury starts coaching the Cardinals, it's going to be air raid and it's going to be exactly what he did at Texas Tech, and it's going to be, you know, little guy back there running around and doing stuff. And I think we need to give Cliff Kingsbury a little more credit than that as an offensive guru. I don't think I hope there's not just one way or one type of quarterback that he can lead or that he can coach or that he can build an offense around. If he is, he's not very good.
Listen, I'm not giving him any credit yet until I see what he does. I mean, you know, I want to see some success before we start giving guys credit that have never coached in the NFL before. I mean, that's
okay.
Me.
Maybe
I mean,
credit is the wrong. Maybe that's the wrong word. But don't you think a fair assumption is that he can work with different types of quarterbacks and not one specific?
I don't think there's any question about that.
Okay. Okay, so credit was the wrong word. Yeah. An assumption. I'm operating under the assumption
that he can't just work with one quarterback.
Yeah, that there's not just one type of quarterback, and that's the only type of guy he can work with. And I was happy to hear him say that today because I think that notion's kind of silly.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, if you took him in, he's got to be able to help every quarterback he works with. You know, if the guy's 5'10", or if he's 6'3", if he's got a strong arm, or if a guy's if he's got a big hand, or he's just got to be able to work with these guys. He's got to create an offense tailor-suited to the quarterback he has. And that's one of the problems that Steve Wilks had with the defense last year. I mean, here's my system. If you don't fit in it, then you're not going to play Dale Buchanan, Hassan Reddick. And, you know, where I think what Cliff's going to do is, I'm going to look at the strengths of my quarterback. I got a whole year of NFL film to look at all the things. And there are things that Josh Rosen is going to say he did well and things that he didn't do well. And that's what he's got to do. He's got to devise a game plan that best suits Josh Rosen. I think he will.
Yeah. As odd as it may sound, they're coming off one of their best losses of the season. But ASU's tournament hopes hanging by a thread. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the campus of Grand Canyon University tonight, opening up the baseball season against Wichita State here from Brazel Field, the newly remodeled Brazel Field. And no visit to GCU would be complete without a visit for a few minutes with the head baseball coach, Andy Stankiewicz, who joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Good to see you again, Coach. How have you been?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
What a beautiful facility. We were talking about this. This stacks up there with most spring training facilities.
Yeah, we're really, really blessed to have this. The support of the administration is just incredible. It really is. They don't stop. They want to make sure that all of our teams here are uniformed right and got the gear and got the stadiums, got everything we need to have success. So we're really fortunate.
Back-to-back WAC regular season titles. I mean, you've been here for 8 years now. How long did it take you to really get this program where you wanted it to be?
Well, we're not there yet. We gotta make a run. We gotta get even better, and that's the goal. The goal, like everybody starting up tonight, everybody wants to get to Omaha, and that's the same for us. But it's been a labor of love. It's been fun. I mean, I can't even believe I've been here 8 years. It just has gone that quickly. I think that's when you know you're in the right spot. You know that you're enjoying yourself, and we're having a great time building it. Got a great coaching staff that hustles and recruiting, and they know how to coach these young men and teach them how to be men and teach them to go to class. And we're graduating guys. We got guys graduating in 3 years. It's just it's really a neat place to be. I can tell you that.
Four players taken in the draft last year. Jake Wong. The highest pick since Tim Salmon. Having those players drafted, how much does that help you when you're out there and you're recruiting kids and you're trying to bring kids to this program?
It's a huge help. Nope, there's no doubt. And when you get guys that are starting to get drafted in the first five rounds, that means the professional community is taking notice. And you get drafted, you know, in the third round, that means that there's some expectations. That means you've done it well in college or high school, if you got drafted in high school. But I think that, you know, guys are seeing that in the Valley. You're seeing that, you know, nationally now that hey, if they come here, this is a great place to be, guys. You can look at the stadium, look at the weather we get. We've got the half field, we've got the batting cages. We've got, everything we think we need to develop players as well. And so I think it's a great place to come develop. And we're getting, like you said, guys getting drafted early and well and going out and starting their pro careers. I think it's been a huge, huge help.
There's obviously such a deep pool of baseball players to draw from here in the Valley and the state because of the weather and the climate and everything like that. And I used to think of GCU baseball years and years and years ago as, well, hey, you know, if you can't go to ASU, if you can't go to U of A, hey, you can go to GCU. I get the sense, based off of the success that you've had in the draft, the success that you had in recruiting, that it's blown way past those expectations. I mean, it's not just that anymore, right?
Burns, you're exactly right. I think that's our goal. Our goal is to, you know, it's difficult. You know, ASU, what a great history, and U of A, and great history. And people don't understand that when I was going to college out in Los Angeles, I knew about Grand Canyon baseball. I knew about Tim Salmon. I knew about the players. And you're in pro ball, and you're rubbing shoulders with guys, and they said they played at Grand Canyon. You knew that they were good players. And so we're trying to build that, you know, build that model again. And I think that we're starting to be able to recruit up against some of the bigger boys here in the state. And I think people are looking at what we have and the academic piece of it as well. And like, hey, this is a should be just as good an option as anyone else. And so that's where we're starting to make some headway. We're starting to get some in-state. I'll be honest with you, sometimes I call a top prospect in the state and I wouldn't get a call back. Now it's nice to get a phone call back.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're getting plenty of phone calls back.
I mean, look at the schedule. I mean, you're playing Stanford, Wichita State, you play in Arizona. I mean, you could sell that schedule to a lot of kids, too.
That's a big part of it, no doubt. People from Southern California, they see that we're playing USC, we're playing TCU. You know, if you want to play, you want to be the best, we got to compete against the best, and that's kind of been, you know, our methodology in scheduling is like, hey, let's try to just toe it up with the best, and we feel like that's going to help us in conference, and we feel like that's really held true the past 2 years, and now we got to get over that hump. Now it's time. You know, we talk about the guys all the time. Now it's not one thing to just play them. I just don't want to just play them just as an exercise. I want to play them, and I want to compete, and I want to win. And so we feel like that time is coming now where we got to do better than just competing in that environment. We got to start winning some big games.
Coach, we appreciate you stopping by for a few minutes. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on before the game to do, but I'm expecting a big crowd tonight, and we appreciate you stopping by for a few. Good luck this season.
I'm going to stay here and watch your game tonight.
Beautiful ballpark, and curious to see what you guys do this year, so good luck.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure. Love listening to you guys. It's fun. I'm driving in and out of work. It's great to listen to sports talk.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Our kids played softball together.
Yeah.
Yeah, many years ago.
So I heard. Outstanding. All right, Coach. Thanks, good seeing you. Thank you very much, Sama. Good luck tonight.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Andy Stankiewicz joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Shows. We're live from Brazel Field, where GCU will open up tonight against Wichita State. In the meantime, switching colleges and switching sports to ASU basketball. We had Casey Jacobson on the show yesterday. He called ASU's game against Colorado a couple nights ago, and we asked him point blank if ASU should be worried about missing the tournament. Here's what he said.
No question they should be worried. They're not an at-large bid team right now, despite the fact that they had clearly the best non-conference for the second consecutive year, mind you, the best non-conference of any Pac-12 team with their two quad one wins. Mississippi State is still a top 25 team. And Kansas at home. But to build a resume, it isn't just about your quality wins. I would start there, okay? But then you have to go down to avoiding bad losses.
So I couldn't wait for the latest bracketology to come out from Joe Lunardi. Not that he's the end-all, be-all. He gets them wrong, too. I get it. It's kind of like mock draft. It's a little better than mock draft.
Well, yesterday we were waiting for the net rating to come out, and they dropped a couple of spots in the net rating from 72 to 74, but we didn't have any bracketology yesterday to see what people were thinking.
Right now, Joe Lunardi has them, the Sun Devils, as a 12 seed playing in, again, one of the first four games, playing Temple in a battle of 12 seeds to see who would move on to be able to play Wisconsin of five. So he's got him in.
He's got him as the last one of the last four in.
But like last year, kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So, and I think it's going to be like that most of the year.
It's just dreadful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's like you come off of this unbelievable, you know, non-conference schedule. You beat Kansas again, and, you know, you're like, just, all right, just take care of business in the Pac-12. Just don't do anything stupid, like lose to Washington State. And then you'll, you know, you'll be in good shape. I mean, I wonder, I really do wonder, and I don't know if anybody would be able to tell us this, the bracketology guys, if they had won that game against Washington State and not lost it and didn't throw a quad four loss on there, and the only major slip up was the Princeton game, I wonder if they had won that game if they'd be a lot more secure in where they are. I would think that because we said
so nothing else changes.
Nothing changes except
just
they beat
Washington State instead of losing to Washington State.
Are they a 10 seed right now?
That's a 10 seed. You want my best guess? They're a 10 seed right now.
That's my best guess. That loss did more damage than the win against Washington did help. The loss did more damage than the win did help. But to see them as a 12 seed, one of the last four in, that's why I'm thinking, God, they really, really need to, you know, they need to take care of business in these final, you know, six games and make sure they go at least 5-1.
They've got Utah tomorrow. Jay Billis, in his, what does he call it, the Billis meter, something like that, on ESPN.com. I forgot the name of it for just a second. He has got ASU as the 51st best team in the country, in his opinion. And in his words, scratching at a bid to the NCAA tournament. I mean, everybody agrees that they are up against it. And I respect what Casey Jacobson said yesterday, that he doesn't think ASU should even be considered a bubble team right now.
I do not think that they are on the bubble. If the selection committee got in a room, this is just my opinion, I don't think Arizona State would make a list of 5 to 10 teams that are in or out. I don't think they're on the list right now.
I would respectfully disagree with Casey. I think they're at least on the list and they're in the conversation.
Yeah, well, the teams you're looking at, in all honesty, you're looking at Wofford, you're looking at Hofstra, St. Mary's, UNC Greensboro, Belmont, North Texas, Davidson, Buffalo. Even tonight, Buffalo's at Toledo. Buffalo's 9-3, and a win at Syracuse, which holds a lot of weight. Davidson hosts St. Joseph, and they're 0-2 versus Quad 1, but they're 8-0 versus Quad 4. So, like, you start to look at these games tonight: Davidson against St. Joseph, Buffalo against Toledo. These are games that are going to matter for ASU. Now you got to start scoreboard watching, because ASU hasn't done enough to be able to get in on their own.
So, if Josh Rosen is truly the quarterback for the Cardinals' future, how does Cliff Kingsbury envision him fitting into his offensive scheme? We'll talk about that next here on this Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show.